I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Text Message. I'm Nate Langson.
And I'm Ian Morris.
And as always, we are starting with this week's picks from the UK tech news. And we're going to start by talking about Adele, not a common member of this podcast's menagerie of topics, but there is a reason why we want to talk about this and why there is a tech angle, certainly a tech media angle. Adele's new album is not going to be on Spotify, nor is it on Apple Music, nor other streaming platforms. And we've talked about this in the past when people like Taylor Swift have kept their albums off certain streaming music services to make a statement about the music industry, if nothing else. And I thought, well, we hear about a lot of big American acts keeping their music from their fans on various subjects. And I think it's worth reminding ourselves that actually this is something that we're doing extremely close to home. And Adele is you know, one of the biggest musician recording artists in the world. It's often reported that her appeal spans many ages, demographics, countries, everything. To me, on the one hand, as a slightly backhanded compliment, I suppose, that does say to me that it's music so generic and so lacking any need for any kind of definition that it literally appeals to anybody because it doesn't offend a single person.
That's quite an interesting attitude you take to it, actually. I mean, I know we're not a music podcast, but I don't know that she seems to get a lot of hassle from various people.
I don't want to talk particularly extensively about that topic because it is there. It's there to be controversial.
Surely that's not. I mean, she's just pop, right? That pop is supposed to be like available to most people to like.
Well, funny you should say available to most people, because that's exactly what Adele is it basically isn't doing here. And the tech angle to this is that we're once again seeing a very popular artist doing one of two things. Well, one thing, but explained in two different ways, depending on, again, the side of the hate fence you sit upon. The first angle, the more supportive for the music industry angle, is that Adele is selling millions of records. Her new album is out this, I think, either this week or last week, and it's sold hundreds of thousands of copies in its first week. It's one of the biggest debuts ever in terms of album sales, which is no
people were queuing up, you know, in HMV.
Not to be sneezed at, you know, an amazing achievement. And so she's sort of in this position where she can wield this power to say, I'm going to pick what platforms is going to be available on, and I'm only letting it be available on album as an album in formats that you have to pay for up front and you cannot stream it. Now, that's one. And to me, that feels a little bit like saying, you know, I'm at the very end of a generation of musicians and at the end of the generation for the music industry where it is possible to overcharge people for music, and I'm damn well going to reap the benefit for my personal reward. On the other hand, and again, same issue, but from the other side of the fence, is choosing the platforms that the listeners want to listen to their music on, or rather choosing the platforms that you're allowing your fans to listen to your music on. They are paying for Spotify. They are paying for Apple Music. I mean, not everyone's paying for Spotify, I admit, but that's an argument from Adele's previous album.
They're sort of paying for it. I mean, you know, they may not be actually paying for it, but there is monetization happening.
What we're seeing, though, is an artist say, nope, you are not listening to my music through the channel that you want to listen to it on. Therefore, I am pushing you towards piracy. And I did some highly anecdotal looking at some numbers on a very popular BitTorrent website just to have a look at the amount of CDs and downloads we have from very popular musicians. I picked two British acts, two very massive, big-selling British acts that I think in terms of appeal are comparable. Adele's 25, at the time of writing, had about 10,000 people seeding her album at that time, and the particular torrent on that website had been downloaded just under 80,000 times. I then went and looked at One Direction's new album, massive pop group, allegedly their last album, so even more reason to buy it in numerous copies or what have you. 1,200 seeders downloaded just under 20,000 times. So that's about a quarter of the total downloads and, you know, almost a tenth of the total number of people sharing it online. And we've talked before about how streaming services are competing with piracy more than they're competing with paid for services. And this highly anecdotal one tiny look into one torrent on two popular British pop artists suggests that the album that is not available to stream is being pirated incredibly highly compared to the recent release of another massive pop artist that is available to stream. And although I'm sure there are many people who could argue that these numbers are not representative, I wasn't necessarily looking to see if these numbers would support a theory. I was just very surprised when I checked the figures and just saw just how big the difference is between those two. So anyway, that's the position we're in. Adele isn't streaming this album. And part of me says, well, you know what? If I was a popular singer, and although I sound like I was dissing her earlier, it's a bit of a backhanded compliment. She's a fantastic musician, and I respect her enormously, even though I don't like that type of music. I just sort of think, is this a bit of an FU to the fans? You know, I know that we're not out of the era of piracy yet, and I know that streaming isn't putting money in the back of pockets, but she's also one of the people that can sell out giant theatres. You know, does she really need to be making a statement that takes her music out of her fans' hands and pushes people towards the last generation of music access, which was illegitimate? I don't know. What's your view, Ian, before I get even higher on this soapbox?
She can do what she wants, can't she, really? I mean, I guess it's a business decision, isn't it? In the same way that you would, you know, you would pick and choose if you were releasing a movie. You know, you might hold. Well, I guess your example could be that you hold back a DVD release, you do a theatrical release first, and that gets you some money from the theatres. There's a bit of demand, blah, 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 blah. And then once that demand settles down and it sort of goes away, then you send out a DVD and a Blu-ray and a download, and then you make some more money. So I don't think it's any different to that. I think musicians were maybe a little bit slow to consider the idea that actually maybe streaming is for your back catalogue, perhaps, and your new album goes, you know, as a buy whole thing first, and then later on you can stream it. Presumably, yeah, it's possible to buy it track by track on iTunes or something. I mean, I haven't looked. Sometimes you can't. Some tracks are only available with an album, aren't they?
That's true, and usually that's things like long songs. Sometimes that has happened on streaming services as well. I've seen some albums have all but one song streamable on Apple Music and things like that, but just one song didn't have availability. I've noticed that, but you can still buy all of Adele's songs individually on iTunes. Yes, and sorry, just to confirm that is true. Yes, you can buy one song if you prefer. She's not getting away from that. And there are exceptions. Pandora, which is very popular in the US, will be streaming because that is more in line with radio play than it is with streaming.
Yeah,
music.
Because you can't choose what you're listening to on Pandora, can you? So much. Right. I mean, you give it a rough idea about what you like, but you're not able to say, I want to listen to Adele's album. It's probably on Last FM as well, maybe. I don't know. You know, because again, it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? It isn't. That's generating interest in the album. People are hearing the songs. They're going, oh, that's good. I could go and buy that. And then they're being encouraged to do that. It will be on streaming services soon, I would think. I can't imagine she's interested in holding out. A couple of weeks is probably enough. And ultimately, you know, if you really want it, you can go and buy it. If you wanted to listen to it on a streaming service and you can't afford it, a wait's not going to kill you, is it? It's still going to be there in a couple of weeks' time.
But we are in the era where everybody has an insatiable feeling of entitlement.
Well, you know, yeah, they're going to have to stop it, aren't they? Because you're not entitled to anything.
No, but you know what? I mean, I do respect Adele and this decision in that she is one of the few artists who can get away with keeping music from certain services and making as much money as is physically possible. But it still feels like a little bit of a slap in the face to the fans who are paying £10 a month for Spotify or paying £10 a month for iTunes, want to access that, and then are having to say, well, really, I've got to pay again? Don't I pay for this? And this is where the technology is the thing that is now is coming between the artist and the fan. Like, it's meant to be there as an enabler. It's meant to generate access, and obviously I'm saying that from this side of the music industry's fence as a consumer, not as a creator. And I imagine that any bands and artists listening, and I know for a fact that many, you know, some friends I have in bands on Facebook, when I've asked, shall I stream your music or buy the CD, they're all like CD. So I get that there's a financial benefit there, but I just can't get away from the fact that it feels a little bit like a slap in the face. And maybe, as you say, after first week sales are done or first month or what have you, we'll see it land on the other streaming services. But I'm looking forward to getting away from this era where it kind of feels like the artists are against the fans, even though they don't want to be, and the fans want to support the artists, but they can't quite pay for all the things they want to. And somewhere in the middle of this, everyone's blaming piracy and streaming sites, when actually the streaming sites have actually managed to take piracy down while the record labels and everyone else wasn't doing anything to help their cause. So I don't know. That's where we're at.
And here's a couple of things, though. I mean, just a couple of finishing off points. First of all, having a quick look around, I noticed that I think that the music industry is doing its thing where it spams news groups with fake copies of the album, because I'm having a look at some of the reports and they're all saying things like passworded and spam, which probably means that someone at the record label is uploading fake copies, which is quite a good way of preventing people downloading it, actually. It works fairly well. And the other thing was, the thing that annoys me slightly more than this, actually, is what happened. Carly Rae Jepsen's done this a couple of times, where she's released a song in the US a long, long time before she's released it in the UK.
I can tell you someone much closer to your heart that's done that as well. Tiesto.
Oh, really?
He did that with his single. No, that is getting to a way, way, way more annoying side of things, because an artist I'm a big fan of is a woman called Ingrid Michaelson, and she does this with every damn album, it seems. And there are just digitally released versions of songs where you can literally only pay for them digitally. There's no CD, there's no anything, and they are still region locked to the US and Canada.
It's all right, you can buy an iTunes voucher, can't you, and get it that way.
Why should I?
I know, it's ridiculous. I don't understand it.
I mean, it got to the point where I wanted to just download the BitTorrent and put money in the post or give it to a charity and write her and her label a letter and say, look, I'm sitting here basically doing the Futurama meme, shut up and take my money.
Yeah.
And why are you this desperate to not accept cash? It's completely mental. It's actually down to distribution deals and license deals more than anyone actually trying to punish other countries.
I don't care.
Who cares?
I just want, when it comes to something that I'm actually interested in owning, or at least, like one track, I just think, you guys are missing out on money. This is how piracy gets a grip, is when people want something and they can't get it, and it's easier for them to press a button than it is to buy a single song. And so that's just my final word on it, really.
Well, I believe technology should be an enabler and should never be something that causes confusion to people, particularly when it comes to the creative arts. It's there to be enjoyed. So I'm not a massive fan of any kind of roadblock, even if they are done out of the kind of the business savviness of a recording artist who is the last in her, an era to be able to do so. I still kind of feel that to just completely make it unavailable in every sense is just, I don't know. I'm not on board with that.
People keep saying this, but, you know, there's everyone saying that, you know, these are the last artists that are going to go platinum, but there's still plenty of people doing it. You know, I mean, like, Adele will obviously get platinum, I'm sure, for this, and, Taylor Swift's just done that in the States. I think maybe people are underestimating the power of music, actually.
No, I completely disagree, because what you're saying is, literally the most popular musicians on the planet, a handful of them are capable of still doing it. That's not what it should be necessarily.
Well, I don't. I mean, do you not think that? I mean, I think that it. There's obviously a reason that some people aren't getting up there. I think maybe this does happen with things occasionally. You know, where you find that there are only a very very small number of people able to achieve absolute greatness in a particular industry or whatever. Is that not part of the, you know, the natural order of things? And maybe it'll go away again. Maybe if, you know, I mean, as technology gets better and discovery gets better, you know, like.
Isn't getting better. That's the problem. We used to be in a situation where you would walk into a sweet shop and it would be Twix, Mars, Milky Way, Maltesers, pornography, shop seller, water, door. And you walk in and say, what do I need? I'm thirsty, I'm horny. Water, porn, thanks, out. No problem. But we're now in this era where you walk in and you're basically walking into the Wonka factory, which is what streaming services are, where it's like, here are 25 million songs, literally, without much exception, everything that's ever been released ever, here it is, now go nuts. It's like, what are you supposed to do with that? You start exploring, and that's one of the reasons why people aren't necessarily streaming all these songs, because they are discovering decades of amazing musical recordings for the first time ever. They've been able to have access to it, and older music is sometimes better than the newer music, even if you're young. And I think that that's just another reason behind this.
Music is something that's, you know, you are a musician. You have a lot more to say about it than I do. I just quite like Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah, well, I've heard she's covering Wham this Christmas, so I've immediately lost what tiny amount of respect I had for her.
Oh, she's amazing. She's amazing. She? Yeah, mm-hmm. She is.
Well, I'll have to say, just for a bit of balance here, the new Born of Osiris album is probably their best work ever in four albums. I highly recommend if you like Egyptian-esque, slightly inspired American deathcore.
Well, who doesn't? Who amongst us can say that they aren't a big fan of, what was it, Egyptian-themed American deathcore?
Yeah, it's just, you know, kind of, yeah. I mean, not as Egyptian as Nile. You know, everything in their work is kind of
Nile's earlier work was superior.
Well, some would argue actually that you were right.
Yeah, I had a 50-50 chance there, right? So
yeah. Anyway, we've gone on about this for a bit longer than I planned, but obviously, Ian and I are passionate about it, and I imagine people listening are passionate, and I imagine a huge number of you are Adele fans or have Adele's album simply because she is, you know, she's
popular.
She's very popular, and she spans many, many, many age groups and what have you. And well done to her too, and great to see someone from Britain being able to compete with the likes of Taylor Swift when it comes to holding their music to account. Now, I want to know what everyone thinks, though, and how you responded. You're tech-savvy lot listening, because, hell, you're listening to a podcast. So let us know, what is your view? Did you buy Adele's album as a fan, despite the fact that you pay for streaming services? And, you know, that's cool. I do the same thing. I have streaming services, but I buy CDs because I prefer the quality, not because I'm being forced to. But I'm curious about everyone else's view and how you think, as a fan, this has played out for you. Podcast at natelangson.com or at natelangson on Twitter or at textmessagepod on Twitter as well. Just let us know what you think. We will come back to this in a week. Ian, it's time to talk about Sky, not the three-dimensional canvas that floats above our heads on a daily basis. But,
well, it's not really floating, is it?
Well, the clouds sort of do.
They
float,
do.
I guess.
They do. It's just I can't. I always remember that, you know, that whenever, if you say anything near Nate about astrophysics that's even, you know, vaguely off, there'll be an immediate correction made by then, Nate.
Yes,
like if anyone says the sun is on fire, everyone's like, no, the sun's not on fire. There's no fire on the sun. And yeah, of course that's true, but you know. Anyway, we're all not talking about that, Sky, anyway.
No, we're not. We're talking
about the oppressive monopoly which governs our broadcast TV.
Well, it's at least allowing some more choice now, because this week it has announced something called Sky Q, which some people have questioned why it's called Sky Q. My personal belief is that it sounds like IQ, as in the smarts.
Sounds a lot more like Sky Poo, mate.
Well, let's get to that, shall we? What is SkyQ? Well, firstly, it is a new brand rather than an individual product. It's a range of new set-top boxes. It's got something called a SkyQ mini box, which is feels to me a little bit like what Sonos does. It's a smaller version of a set-top box that allows you to stream content around your home from a central hub. It's also got, there's a SkyQ Hub internet router. It's got SkyQ apps for mobile devices. It's got a new SkyQ Touch remote. This is completely separate to the Sky Plus HD box that people have got, and it is also going to support Ultra HD 4K content. And so this to me feels like a much bigger deal than I initially thought it was, which was just a whole new range of boxes, kind of like when Virgin did TiVo. This is Sky basically saying, we're moving into Ultra HD, and these are the products that we want you to use if you want that premium service. Now, I've been on a soapbox for quite a while, and this now television that is something that is a little closer to Ian's aortic pump. And so, you know, I wish to put a pair of lips on that that pump and see
that's
what
odd.
Squirts
you,
out.
Well, that's dear.
Sky Q.
Well, okay. So, I've written quite a bit about Sky over the last year or so, and it's an interesting subject because I have some pretty strong opinions about it.
Go on, then.
And yeah, well,
whip them out.
But let's go through this new box. I believe, and I actually know this because I haven't had it confirmed, I will be seeking to do so, but there is a technology that was developed in part with SES Astra, who are the company that transmits all of Sky's channels. They're the ones who put the satellites in orbit and then, you know, they lease out satellite time in order for people to be able to, you know, broadcast their channels. But they have a product called SatIP, which is actually very clever. And what it allows you to do is have a little box in your house into which you plug your satellite dish. And then rather than you having to have lots of sky boxes or lots of little satellite boxes around with all connected to the dish, this streams content out over your home network. I mean, it can do that over Wi-Fi, although that's probably not advisable. Or it can do it over, say, power line or fixed cables. And so the idea is that you have maybe one box. It has four tuners in this, in the case of the one I have, which is an Elgato. And then that can you can tune into four things, and you can watch it on tablets, laptops, you know, phones, and even there are boxes which you can plug into your TV. They don't have any particularly complicated electronics in, but they just connect to the other main box and do satellite. Now, I believe that this is what Sky is using in their system. Now, I'm sure of that in some ways because Sky was involved very heavily in the process of developing SatIP in the first case.
And that is very similar to what SkyQ is, just to sort of butt in with a slight explanation of what the SkyQ mini boxes do. These are the ones that I compared to the Sonos hubs, which is that you've got your main box, which has a number of tuners in.
12
tuners, okay. And then you could have, if you live in a mansion and you're the world's biggest and also most antisocial family, you can have a SkyQ box in 11 other rooms.
Well, you can't actually. You can only have two extra boxes.
All right. Well, you can use the apps because you've got your apps.
I don't know. You might. Well, I guess you'll be limited to some extent because five of the tuners are used up with the main box.
Let's just assume then that you want to record some stuff on the main box, you've fallen out with your mum and you've fallen out with your sister and you all want to go and just watch your own things and you also don't want to miss the film that's on, so you record that as well. That's what this will do, and it allows you to, as you say, with your existing setup that you've got, basically beam a bunch of these things simultaneously around the house to these kind of dumb terminals that just suck the content from the main box, which is what's receiving all of these channels. And that's a big part of what SkyQ seems to want to do,
is
that it wants to democratize the set-top box, is my understanding.
Well, we'll come on to box democracy shortly. Yes,
boxtrophy, you might say.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And of course, the sub boxes, the little ones, which you can put in bedrooms and stuff like that, also have the advantage that they can connect to Sky's online streaming services. So you've got catch-up TV on there. And of course, a whole bunch of sort of on-demand content, which you can pay for or, you know, buy or rent and all that kind of usual stuff. So it's quite a good idea. Certainly, from a technological point of view, it's probably one of the best set-top boxes in the world. I mean, it's a very clever idea. It's quite well thought out. It will deprive Sky of a small amount of their revenue because at the moment they're charging, I believe it's something like £5 extra for multi-room. And we don't know pricing on this yet, actually, I have to say, and it is worth being slightly cautious because Sky isn't well known for introducing new technologies at no extra cost. HD, I believe, in most cases, unless you're on a very top package, it still costs an extra £10 a month, I believe, which is staggering when you think about the fact that HD is years old now, and it really shouldn't be considered a plus thing. It should be considered the basic level.
I agree. When you can have a mobile phone that has a full HD screen,
well, absolutely,
I think you can safely assume that televisions should at least have the same by default.
HD is not really a premium product anymore. But of course, it's very difficult when you're a business to say, well, let's just cut that off, because ultimately you're then killing off a huge revenue, and you've got to explain that to shareholders somewhere by saying, well, yeah,
well, more realistically, buy money. You would say, because it makes us more competitive against Virgin.
That's very true.
But Sky went to HD in 2006, so we're talking 10 years since then.
It's a long time, isn't
because
it?
Because this Sky Q is coming out next year in 2016. They say it's going to have 4K Ultra
it
HD
will, yes.
at start. And they have said, and I'm looking at a Pocketlint article for this, and somebody at Sky told Pocketlint that, quote, when we do launch it will be the UK's most comprehensive Ultra HD service. It's not just going to be a load of live sport, it's going to be movies and entertainment too. So they are obviously trying to get ahead of the game and offer something more comprehensive than they did with, say, 3D, which frankly
was dismal.
This is now a corpse in the water.
They've shut it down. They've shut their most of their 3D content. You can still buy on demand 8 3D from them, but apart from that, it's dead in the water. It also wasn't their system was not great for delivering a 3D. Really, it well overstepped its bounds.
Let's not get into an argument about who did 3D worst.
No.
Let's just assume that anyone who has dysentery isn't very well. There are scales of dysentery.
Yes,
but it's all basically unpleasant. So this is the next generation for Sky. It's a major broadcaster. We have to pay attention to it. It's huge. Whatever they do, it's going to, if not be successful, is at least going to have competitors thinking, what do we need to do, or what do we do better that we can improve even further?
Well, and should I tell you now what I think's wrong with what Sky always does in terms of what's available to the general public? If you were to use a separate box, a Linux set-top box, you can't do that with Sky because they won't allow it, because
you've
can't
already
plug
put
their
off
card.
80% of the population.
No, I know.
Minimum.
Well,
by saying Linux.
Well,
box.
No, you don't really have to consider the fact that it's a Linux, but it doesn't matter. It's transparent to the end user. What I'm saying is that Sky prevents you from using any third party hardware at all to access its services, which means that you have absolutely no choice in how you pay, in how you get the content you're paying for. And of course, Sky has very specific reasons for doing that, and it's to prevent people from getting Sky for free. But at the same time, and also things like recording. So when you record a Sky show, it's recorded on your set-top box and it's encrypted. Now, on a set-top box not made by Sky, you can optionally store the encryption key with the recording so that you can play it back when your subscription lapses. And obviously Sky doesn't want you to do that, but you've already paid for that content, which aired when you did have a subscription. So as soon as your subscription ends, you can no longer watch it, which seems to me slightly unfair, and I've always thought that's one of the worst things about it. But really, Sky gives you no freedom. This box addresses a lot of that by letting you stream to tablets and things like that, which is a good thing, because that was something you could do on Linux boxes, for years, and have all access to all of these brilliant things that are technically very easy, but that Sky just prevented you from doing. But of course, if you can't put a Sky card in it and use it, then, you're scuppered, aren't you? My personal opinion is that Ofcom should stop being a bunch of wet fish and force Sky to open up their platform so that people can use it on other devices. But it's never going to happen.
By being closed in that way, they are possibly able to negotiate better deals.
Maybe.
Because
but honestly,
it's safer. Look at what
really?
Happened when music... Let's just
yes.
talk about the music industry side of things. The thing that got the music industry on board with iTunes in the first place was the fact that they were copy protected, so they felt they had a modicum of security
yes,
in the
but
first
let me
place.
Just stop you for a minute there. Do you feel that any
program on TV currently that you would not be able to download over the internet if you wanted to.
No, obviously
right,
not.
There we go. What are they going to prevent? They're not going to prevent anything, are they? If that is seriously part of the negotiations, then we are in worse trouble than I thought.
Well, so is that the thing that you think is wrong with this, that is always wrong with Sky, that their hardware too closely guards the access that you have to the content you have paid
that,
for?
Well, yeah, I think any time when you are, you know, you might legitimately want to subscribe to Sky, and even if you ignore all the other stuff, why shouldn't you be allowed to pick the box that you want to buy? I mean, you know, Sky Q is probably going to be quite expensive, would be my guess. It's quite likely that there'll be 4K capable boxes much cheaper available with many of the same features, and you could still have a perfectly legal Sky subscription. If, I mean, obviously you can't because they don't allow it, but and then you put your card in a third party box. What I don't understand why any competitive market it would be legal or acceptable for a company to prevent you from using your paid for subscription in a way that suits you better.
I'll tell you why. Because you agreed to it when you signed up.
Well, yeah, but that's not the point, really, is it? I mean, the thing
kind
about
of. Yeah, well, kind of. I think it is, because if somebody's offering you a service, you've got choice. There is plenty of competition in the
market.
Well,
who do you go to then if you want satellite TV in the UK?
Well, get rid of the satellite bit, because that bit's irrelevant.
Irrelevant, is it? Because it's the only way of delivering content en masse.
It isn't now.
That is available to the whole country. The cable isn't available to everyone, and you can't stream everything.
But you can pay for everything still. And like, if you get rid of the mode of delivery, whether it's satellite, cable or IP, you've still got the likes, big players like Sky TV. Sky TV, I mean, you've got Virgin, you've got Netflix, you've got Amazon Love Film. You know, there's a bunch of these things. Did I really call it Amazon Love Film? That was weird.
Well,
you've got Amazon Prime Instant Love Video Film. And I think that we've got a reasonable amount of competition that says, well, you know what? We've got to accept that if somebody signs up for something, then it's pretty fair that they should stick to the rules. And you know me, I'm all for access to stuff, but I actually think that from face value on this, I see more to be excited about than not, in that it is a move to Ultra HD 4K. It's doing it in a way that seems to be saying, we acknowledge that you don't want to be tied to one box, you don't want to be tied to one TV, you don't even want to be tied to one type of screen, and you want to be able to do them simultaneously, and you want to be able to record stuff for future, and we want to make it in a way that is universally accessible, therefore we're designing a consistent user interface. Like, that in itself is a really good thing. And I mean, I'm not even a Sky customer, I'm a Virgin customer. They get my money, although admittedly only for broadband. I don't have a TV or phone subscription. But for me, I feel like if I wanted TV, this is the way that I would want to just basically call someone up and say, here is money, give me lots of telly, I have lots of devices, and they give it me, and it comes through in 4K, and I can watch it on an iPad. That to me feels like a pretty good offer, and I don't feel like I'm forced into this. I still feel I could complement it with what I have now, which is my Virgin broadband, the 150, 200 meg, whatever it is, and a combination of Netflix and iTunes. You know, I just bought the Peep Show series pass on iTunes. It was a tenner. I get the episode in 1080p when it's aired, and I can watch it on a bunch of devices.
That's pretty good.
You know, I feel that's pretty good, but I could also do the same on Sky and watch other stuff on demand. And you know, I get your point, and I love the passion determination you have around
until Sky Q. Basically, Sky was holding customers back with what I would describe as absolutely third-rate hardware, and they were stopping people from legitimately using subscriptions in other boxes. Sky Q, when it's released, which obviously we don't know everything about it yet. We don't know the price and all that. I think, is as you say, it is a really legitimate answer to those grievances. And that's great. You know, if Sky is moving forward and doing things, I will. My big problem in a lot of ways is the fact that, you know, there's all this fuss about, you know, this channel, that channel, service X, Y, presenting it in a certain way. There is an argument that's I'll give you the argument about there's a card which you can put into the back of any TV. It's a European law that there's a conditional access port on the back of every TV sold. you can put a card in there, and then into that card you can put your, you could put your Sky viewing card, and then you would have access to Sky channels on your TV, except you can't because Sky doesn't allow it. So that is one thing that, I mean, again, it's back to the same thing, but that is an option available to people in Europe. You know, you can easily do that with a lot of subscription services across the continent. And I just don't see why you shouldn't be able to. I do appreciate what you're saying. You know, you're signing up for a service and you're agreeing to a certain thing. I just don't see why they prohibit legitimate uses like that.
Well, I am very happy to take comment from this from people listening. podcast@natelangson.com. Tweet us, either myself at Nate Langson or Ian Morris 78, and a text message pod on Twitter, preceded by the at sign, of course, but you knew that. You're a smart bunch. You listen to this show. That is, if anything, an admittance that you are indeed smarter than the average bear. And we're going to get back to our show in its more usual format next week, I think. We decided that we felt so passionately about these two topics this week that we've spent the first and second half, respectively, of the program today talking about them. I just wanted to point out one little nugget that came through in an email from Luke, who is our one of our country ambassadors, actually, in the Netherlands, I believe. And Luke wrote in with an email, and I'm just actually going to skip to the last bit of his email because he had a comment about HTC's A9. That was the copycat phone, the alleged iPhone copycat phone. He says, as for the HTC A9, I think it wasn't a very smart move for HTC's side to make a phone look like the most sold mobile phone in the world. I think no matter who did what first, as long as Apple has much larger market share with the iPhone 6 or the 6S, Then HTC with the A9, HTC will be judged by the majority of people as the copycat.
Yeah, that's just a very smart thing to say from our smarter than the average bear listeners, because that's absolutely right. It doesn't matter, does it? That history doesn't remember the fact. No, that's not true. History does remember the facts. People don't remember the facts. They remember their feelings, and their feelings will be that HTC did the ripping off in that case.
Luke, you are smart, not just for listening to the show, but for sending in insightful comments. Thank you very much. Remember, you can be an ambassador if you live in a country that has got you in it, and you leave us a review on the iTunes store and let us know. You are the people that spread the good word. If this podcast was a Jesus, then you would be those reading from whatever Bible it is that we are audibly producing here every week for your listening pleasure. And let us know if you do so. podcast@natelangson.com.
You do realize you just turned it into a cult, right?
I'll be honest. There are worse things to do.
To be cultists about. We're not going to ask anyone to kill themselves or anyone else.
No.
Just listen weekly to the podcast.
I definitely don't want anyone to kill themselves.
No,
ever.
Absolutely not.
And I certainly don't think that anyone should do anything violent. And I certainly do think that we're very grateful that everyone listens and is alive to listen to us. Was that your point?
Yes.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure, to be honest.
No, we're a family, excellent. Not a cult.
Well, there was the Manson family. They were both a family and a cult. But we'll return to that little mental quandary. Next week, I'm off to drown people for my own motives in a lake.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, Visit stripe.com/tapiphone.